Blog Talk Radio.
This is the Horse Radio Network.
What a beautiful day for horses in the morning.
Good morning, everybody. I am Glenda Geek from Lexington, Kentucky.
And I'm Jamie Jennings from Phoenix, Arizona, and you're listening to Horses in the Morning on the Horse Radio Network for February 15th, 2012, episode 338, sponsored by Amazon. Good morning, Horse World.
Big Wednesday, the day you face your own biggest challenge, the day you risk it all, the day you either distinguish yourself or fade into the crowd.
Hang on, we're hitching a ride.
Daddy, I want another pony.
I put 40 hours in this weekend, man, it's only Wednesday. I've been cutting this damn heat all day long, there's got to be another way. So I pick up my guitar and I ride a song. Everybody hears and they sing along. Hey, hey.
Well, good morning, everybody. It's Wednesday, over the hump day. How's your throat doing there, Jamie?
It still hurts. I'm sick of it.
You sound like you have a cold. I didn't think you got colds living in Arizona.
It's winter here, too. Hello. It got down to 40 last night. Oh, my God. It's like freezing.
And it's going to get up to, what, 80 during the day, right?
See, that's why I get sick. It's like 40-degree swings every day.
Layers, lots of layers. Well, Jennifer, we have a lot of things going on the show today. Why don't we go right to you?
On today's Amazon.com Crappiest Wednesday, we are joined by Carrie Blackmere, one of the trainers competing in the first ever Retired Racehorse Training Challenge. She's going to bring us up to speed on how it's going with her OTTB project, Four Times the Trouble. And next up, a gal with a pretty successful project going already, Carly Sparks. She is an ESMA finalist and author of the Get My Fix blog for hunter-jumper addicts worldwide. And being Wednesday and all, thehorse.com is here with our horse health fix of the week. Stay tuned, folks.
Yeah, we've been talking a little cribbing today. We certainly had our share of horses that have cribbed over the years. My daily whinny goes out to co-host of the Western Radio Show, Tammy Sarant, if you remember right. We talked about 2 weeks ago now how she had a bad car accident, was hit by a drunk driver and totaled both the cars, and she had banged her head up a bit and really had a couple of weeks where she couldn't do much. She was pretty out of it. But I talked to her yesterday. She's getting better. She's doing better. She's been staying at somebody else's house, getting help with everything, and she thinks she can move back home now and start taking care of the horses herself. But she still is consulting with a neurologist because of the bang she took on her head. So our best to Tammy, and we're glad that she's getting better.
Well, my daily whinny is going to go out to a woman named Barbara Bank and a guy named Harold McCormick. And those people are the co-owners of Rachel Alexandra. Of course, Jess Jackson was the main owner and he passed away recently. Well, with Rachel Alexandra being bred to Curlin and having a baby, they are doing a naming contest for Rachel Alexandra and her colt. How cool is that? So they get my daily whinny for coming up with such a great idea and letting the fans reach out. Apparently, people have been sending gifts to Rachel Alexandra at Stone Street Farms. They have been sending cards and flowers and presents, and apparently she got a lot of Valentine's Day gifts and stuff. So she's got the baby. They're actually holding a naming contest. So you can go to stonestreetfarms.com, or you can email your name directly to visitrachela@stonestreetfarms.com by midnight on Sunday, February 19th, one submission per household, and on it, it should have your name, address, and phone number, because if your name is chosen, Stone Street Farm is going to have you and a guest come to the farm, stay in the guest house with a private tour of the farm and a visit with Rachel Alexander and her colt. How stinking cool is that?
Oh, my God. You're going to flood the mailbox, aren't you? You're going to be stuffing, and it says only one per household, though. You better come up with a good one, Jamie.
Well, everybody I know, I'm going to send them names to send in, and if I win, then I get to go. I think it's such a cool idea.
That's a pretty cool prize, huh?
Very, very cool. Now, I wonder if they're going to do anything like that with Zenyatta, too, because then I'd be torn, like I'd have to go, you know, like I visited, can I only win one of them? So I'd have to be careful. Well, anyway, the name that they want is something that will reflect the vision that celebrates the memory of Jess Jackson. So come up with something like that. I'm going to go see what's available on the Jackson Club. Yeah, absolutely. But that's just absolutely awesome. Now, another thing that I found before we get to your crappy list, because you have an awesome crappy list, is the video of it's off horsenation.com, Why Getting Married on Horseback is a Bad Idea. So I would love to post that on our Facebook page. Jennifer, if you can do that, I seem to not be able to. Post that on our Facebook page. And again, Why Getting Married on Horseback is a Bad Idea 101, right here in this video, although it didn't end as bad as it could have.
That's true. The last person we know that got married on horseback ended up in divorce. So.
Really?
Yes.
Just bad omen. Bad omen. Don't do it.
Hey, I found out something today. I'm going to do crap. Oh, by the way, it's time for Crappy List Wednesday. I have no music or anything, so that's my introduction. Every Wednesday I look for crappy lists that have something to do with anything. I don't care. I just Google it and see what I can come up with. Well, today I decided to Google study shows because there's all these studies out there. And you always hear, oh, this study showed that blah, blah, blah. So I just Googled study shows. Oh, my God, there are a lot of studies in this world. Tons of them. I must have had 50 pages just from the last day in Google News of this study shows, this study shows, this study shows. So I thought I would just give you some of the headlines. And some of them, most of them, I was reading the headlines going, duh, we needed a study for that? So let's see what you think. Here are the first ones I came to, and then I did stop at one, and I'm going to tell you why, because I actually went in and read this study, and you're going to see why when I read you the title. But first, the first 10 I came across. Study shows 1.8 million dead registered U.S. voters still on the voter list. That's not such a big surprise. I kind of expect that. It's okay as long as they're not actually voting. It's okay to be on the list as long as they're not actually voting. If they're voting, that's a problem. U.S. study shows antibiotics ineffective for most sinus infections. So, Jamie, don't bother going get antibiotics because it won't help. Just saying.
Oh, no. I was thinking about going because I feel like I have a sinus infection.
Well, that's what the study shows. I'll send you the link. You can read it before you go to the doctor. Fukushima nuclear reactors need reinforcing, seismic study says. Okay, those are the ones that blew up. Yes, they're going to need some reinforcing before you restart the plant.
Okay.
I could have saved them $1 million there. See the big crack in the side of the seismic or their nuclear reactor? Yeah, we need to fix that before you restart it. National study shows I can't even say this word. Integrative medicine is effective in treating common and costly health conditions. Now, that's one of those titles that I say probably wasn't a great title because I have no idea what they're talking about. Does it make me want to read it. Yeah, me either. Study shows adult stem cells repair heart attack damage. Now, that's a really cool study. And I actually did read that one. I actually went in and it looks like they don't need baby stem cells to do this. They're finding out that they can take and regurgitate your own stem cells, and it will fix your own stem cells will go back and fix your own heart attack. Oh, that was pretty cool. Study shows alcohol may boost creativity. There's yours, Jamie. Study shows alcohol may boost creativity.
I am so brilliant at about 8:30 p.m. You get in from feeding the horses, you sit down, and the ideas just start coming to me one after another. Too bad I can't remember them by the next morning.
And you know what? That was one of those I said, I should go read that. And then I said, you know, it's going to be one of those really weird, stupid studies that after I read it, I'm going to go, really? So I thought I would just stick with the headline and go with that.
You probably went and got a drink.
Study shows baby boomers purchase the most cosmetics online. When I read that originally, I read it, study shows babies purchase the most cosmetics online. And I took a double take at first, and then I read it again. So apparently us baby boomers are really in need of cosmetics.
New study
shows cancer drug may help Alzheimer's patients. I actually went in and did read that one because I had heard something about that. And this is actually looking promising, that this particular cancer drug in this study, it was a pretty large study too, has been shown to help Alzheimer patients not progress as fast as they were before, which, you know, anybody knows anybody with Alzheimer's knows what terrible disease that is. Apple tops Google in corporate reputation, study shows. So now if you think of those two, which do you think more highly of, Apple or Google, please?
Oh, my gosh. You know, I wouldn't be able to live my life without Google, and I sure do love the heck out of my Apple phone. So it's a pretty standard tie to me.
And now the one where I stopped reading the rest of the pages, and I just focused on this one. And I want to bring it up and go over it a little bit because I consider it very, very important. Are you ready for the headline, Jamie?
I don't think so.
Cake for breakfast, question mark? Study says go for it. Yes, indeed. This particular study, obese participants who ate a breakfast high in protein and carbohydrates that included a dessert were better able to stick to their diet and keep the pounds off longer than those who ate low-carb, low-calorie breakfast. The findings suggest that both... Wait a minute. The findings suggest that both meal timing and meal consumption play a role in weight loss. Carbs and proteins eaten at breakfast may keep us full throughout the day, plus allowing ourselves some sweets helps to stem cravings for these foods. So in other words, what they're saying is if you eat cookies and cake for breakfast, you're less likely to want to nibble on them all day long.
But this just goes all the way back to the one person who is never wrong, ever, and his name is Bill Cosby. And I do believe he did a whole Dad is great. He gives us chocolate cake.
That's
Dad is great. He gives us chocolate cake. See, Bill Cosby is a genius. Bill Cosby
is a president. We have the satellite in our car, and I was listening to the comedy station, and the Bill Cosby thing that came on, the little segment he did about feeding his kids cake for breakfast and his wife getting mad, that just came up yesterday. So it's so funny that you mentioned the Bill Cosby thing, because I just heard that
I will never forget that. I mean, if you watch him do stand-up, he does a whole segment on feeding his kids chocolate cake for breakfast because he's like, what are the ingredients? There's eggs!
Milk!
See, it's... Bill Cosby was right all along 30 years ago when he did that comedy thing. We should have just known. Eat chocolate cake for breakfast.
Let me read this one last paragraph, and then we'll go to our next guest who's waiting here. After 16 weeks of strictly following diets, both groups lost about the same amount of weight. However, during a follow-up period in which participants were advised to stick to the diet but could eat more if they were motivated by hunger cravings, the small breakfast group gained 24 pounds, while the big breakfast group, including cake, lost an additional 15 pounds.
Wow.
So I'm
That's
just
it.
Saying, eat cake every morning for breakfast. There we go. Proof right there.
Ben is great. He gives us chocolate cake. Oh, my God. Well, listen. Hey, do with that what you will. I Googled it and said studies show that eyeballs are increasing in sizes. So yours is way better than mine. So we've, before I continue to embarrass myself in front of the next guest, let's go ahead and bring her on. Her name is Carrie Blackmer. She's one of the trainers from the Retired Racehorse Training Challenge. And the horse she is training is called Four Times the Trouble. Now, I got to, first of all, I'll say good morning to Carrie, and then I'm going to talk to her about something completely unrelated to the Retired Racehorse Training Challenge. Hey, Carrie, how's it going?
Hi, I'm great. How are you?
We're doing fantastic. I must reach through this microphone and give you a big hug, because from now on, every time I go to a horse trial, I'm going to say these things and think of you. There's a video of Carrie. Oh, my gosh. It is so funny. And I wanted Glenn to play it here, but he said nobody will get it but Eventers. And it's a video of Carrie. Tell everybody what the video is and what made you come up with the idea.
Well, there's been these little videos circulating around Facebook for, you know, lots of different things, like what riders say. I've seen one, like what trainers say. So I said, well, somebody's got to do one that stuffy eventers say. So I said, why not? So we were just having a little fun one morning, and yep, and I posted it on my Facebook, and next thing I know, 10,000 views later. So, oops.
I love
it. So we were
it.
Just having
it.
A little fun.
It is so clever, because I was at Galway just last weekend or 2 weekends ago, and holy cow, I think I said everything you said, like, hey, is this whip legal? Are these, what studs are you using? And then the whole, like, do I halt at X or G? Because this test I halted at G, and it was very confusing because I went down the center line. It just didn't make any sense. And I'm like, where do I halt? Do I turn left or right?
We could have kept going on and on, but at some point we had to start riding some horses, so.
Hey, will you tie my penny? Can you tie my penny?
Yeah, exactly.
incredibly clever, and I do appreciate every one that came out of your mouth. It's just so perfect. So if you want to go see those, where's the website that they can go see those?
Well, I think it's still posted on the Retired Racehorse Training page, and I believe it was on Eventing Nation yesterday. I logged on to Eventing Nation, and I was like, oh, that's me. I'm like, okay. So,
EventingNation.com. Yeah, you were totally busted. Of course that's going to get posted on there.
Oh, yeah.
Now, Carrie, tell us a little bit about yourself, and then we'll get into your horse, because your horse is currently on the Retired Racehorse Training Challenge website. They did a vote of who is your favorite horse, and you're currently in third place, but only by 0.7%. So you're pretty close.
Sorry, the vote seems to fluctuate every day, and my students are on top of it. I get daily updates of where I am. Oh, Carrie, you're in first. Oh, no, now you're in second. Oh, you're in third. So my students have been keeping me well aware of where I am in the ranking. So.
Oh, that's funny. That's funny. So you're an eventer. Give us a little bit about your history.
Well, I started eventing when I was in college. So when I was 20, I started doing it, and I was hooked from my very first event. And that's kind of the majority of what I do is three-day eventing. I've competed through Advance. I have every horse that I've competed has been an off-the-track thoroughbred. I mean, that's what I ride. That's what I do. They're the horses that I love. So when I was asked to do this challenge, I was so excited and so thrilled. I was like, oh, absolutely. So.
Oh, it's such a great idea. I love it. So tell us about Four Times the Trouble, and what's his barn name?
His barn name is Tempest, and he is my kind of horse. The moment I saw him at the expo, I knew this is the horse I wanted. So I was thrilled when I got him. He's a typey. He's athletic. I love the way he's built. He's got a little bit of attitude where he's like, he knows he's special. And I just love that about him from the minute I saw him. So I was so thrilled that I got to take him home. So he's just been an absolute pleasure to work with. I'm going to be so sad when this is done and I have to give him up.
Well, now you do get the choice of buying him, right?
I do. So I don't know. I don't know if that'll be in the cards for me right now. I don't know. We'll see.
So how about
I don't know if I'll be able to afford him after all of this. He's going to be a fancy little prospect.
what's he doing right now? Because, you know, a lot of times with these challenges, like the Mustang makeovers, you see these horses at the end of their thing, and they're standing on the back of a pickup truck, they're cracking whips over them, and they're doing all this craziness. What I liked about the Retired Racehorse Training Challenge was that it's like real people training real horses. You know, there's going to be like no magic about it. It's just you guys are going to get to work. So tell us what you started with and where your horse is now.
Well, exactly. And I talked to Stuart about this a little bit as well. I mean, you know, it's a challenge. You know, we only have 5 weeks. We want to get to Pennsylvania and be able to show that we've done something. But at the same time, these are nice horses that we all have. And we all need to keep our horses' best interests in mind, first and foremost. And we want to do it properly. We want to give them a good start, a good foundation, and not push them, you know, past the point of what they really need right now just for the sake of a challenge. And I think, you know, myself, Tiffany, and Eric all are well aware of that. But right now, Tempest, we just started jumping a little bit last week and just doing some really, you know, small coursework. And he's super brave little horse, and he loves to jump, and he absolutely loves it. So we've just started doing a little bit of that. On the flat, we've just kind of been working on the basics, getting him straighter, getting him in front of my leg, you know, teaching him to accept my weight at the canter. Working on our transition, so just all the basic groundwork that you're going to need down the road.
I love that idea, and I love the fact that you've had such amazing experiences with these horses and with off-the-track thoroughbreds. I mean, you've taken them all the way up through advanced, and I've heard of your trainer. His name is Buck Davidson.
Yeah. He's a pretty good guy.
Yeah, we've definitely heard of that guy. So do you have plans? How many off-the-track thoroughbreds do you own right now?
Right now, I personally own, okay, give me a second. 5 or 6 right now. Most of them are at home with me here in Maryland. One of my horses went to Ocala that Buck is competing right now, so... He's the lucky one. He got to go head south. Well, you know, actually, it's not been that cold here, so I can't complain.
Yeah, you've actually had a mild winter this year. So now, tell me this. What is, with the off-the-track thoroughbreds, what is your biggest challenge working with them? What's the one thing that they all seem to have in common that you have to overcome?
You know, I honestly... I feel like it's easier when they come off the track. I don't even feel like you're at a disadvantage with a horse off the track. I mean, of course, every horse is different. But when they come off the track, they already go forward. They've already seen everything. They've been handled. I mean, these horses aren't, you know, the wild, unrideable, unmanageable horses that people sometimes think they are. You know, I think some of the hardest horses I've dealt with are people's homebreds or things that I'm, you know, breaking from the ground. Those are the ones that are the challenge. You know, these racehorses are comparatively easy.
You know, we've owned a bunch of them too, and I think that Jennifer would probably agree with you there. Let me ask you though, now, when do you have to go to Pennsylvania to do the final show, as it, if we want to call it that?
Yep, it is next weekend, the 24th and 25th.
And can you tell us what you're going to do in the ring? What will it be like? What will the competition be like?
Well, I am these next couple weeks. What I'm doing with Tempest is that I'm actually trailering him a good bit off the farm, just to put him in a lot of different environments. Because the expo is kind of a scary place for any horse. I mean, and he's only 4 years old. So taking a 4 year old, you know, into that kind of chaotic environment. I mean, for any breed, any horse, that would be a little bit of a challenge. So what I'm doing with him right now is I'm, you know, trailering him off the farm, taking him to different, you know, indoors, different environments, so he can just kind of get comfortable, you know, being away from his home here right now. So actually I'm driving to Middleburg today to ride with Tiffany Catledge. So we're going to go ahead and ride our guys together.
And the expo. Go ahead, Jake.
Oh, I was going to say, because she's in the whole thing too. How is her horse doing? I think its name is Solidify.
Yeah, Solidify is awesome. I actually got to ride him for a little bit at the Maryland Expo, and he's a great horse. He's going to be up for adoption after this challenge, and anybody who gets this horse is going to be really lucky.
So what do you guys plan on doing together? Isn't this like like kind of hanging out with the enemy? You're consorting with the enemy? Because...
Well, no. I mean, Eric and Tiffany are both so great. I mean, all three of these horses are actually four of them because she has actually two of them there right now. All of them are really great horses. So, I mean, yeah, it's a little bit of a, you know, there's a little bit of competition there, but, you know, we all support each other. So, I mean, you know, we might poke a little fun of Eric once in a while, but hey.
Okay, that's totally stuff eventers say. Okay, yeah, you know, I'm just totally pulling for her. Yeah, you know, it's a little competitive, but when really you're like, I'm going to crush her. I hope she knocks down the rail.
No,
oh, that's,
no.
Maybe that's me. Sorry. So you guys are going to get together. You're going to ride. I would highly recommend. Now, is it legal for you to ace the horse going into the expo center?
You know, I don't see why any of us would have to. You know, we did not do that at Maryland, and these horses were pretty fresh and pretty green. So I see no reason to do it in Pennsylvania, and none of us have plans to. And quite honestly, my horse can be a little bit lazy, so I don't want to, you know, take any forward away that he has.
There you go. Well, then it's a drug-free
Exactly. Exactly.
That's better. Now, this expo, we've been to it a number of times, and it's grown over the years. I remember it's only started, 10 years ago in Pennsylvania. But it always was the same weekend of at the Farm Show Arena there in Harrisburg. It was always the same weekend as the Home Builder Show. So the place was mobbed. You had 50,000 people coming to the Home Builder Show every day, and then you had all the Horse Expo people. So there's going to be a lot of activity in Harrisburg that weekend, I'm sure. It's February 23rd through the 26th at the Pennsylvania Horse World Expo. That's in Harrisburg at the Farm Show Arena. It's a huge complex. Have you ever been there before?
I haven't. I've never been there.
Oh, yeah. It's a huge complex. That's where they hold the Pennsylvania Farm Show in January, which is the largest indoor farm show of its
I think we just lost Glenn. Can you hear me, Jennifer?
I can hear you just fine, and Glenn's over there in his office just chattering away.
Okay. So before we let you go, Carrie, we'll let you finish that up here. It's going to be where and when and how can people go on and find out more? What's the website? And we need to get you some votes.
Oh, yeah. It's retiredracehorsetraining.org. And I think you can vote up until next weekend, I think. So, yeah, everybody check it out. There's some great blog write-ups by everybody. There's some great videos. It's been a lot of fun, as well as educational.
Now, I did go on and I voted for you, but don't tell Tiffany or Eric, okay?
Okay, well, thanks.
Carrie Blackburn, one of the trainers for the Retired Racehorse Training Challenge. We wish you the best of luck. We're so excited about this whole idea, and the whole challenge is fantastic. And hopefully we're going to find these guys some great homes and inspire more people to get a horse off the track and to teach
exactly.
them stuff. Well, I'll see you at the horse trials, girl. Go eventing.
Okay, thank you so much.
All right, talk to you soon. Bye.
Okay, bye.
She is just so bubbly and awesome. Oh, my gosh. Carrie Blackburn. I'm definitely cheering for her. She owns Miles Ahead Farm in Frederick, Maryland. So not a bad gig if you can get it, Jennifer, huh?
You know, she just made me want to go out and ride my horse. She's great.
Oh, I know, right? Well, Maryland is a little far from where you guys are, I guess.
It's a short drive to Maryland, yeah, and it's even colder up there than it is here. So I think I'll stick with Kentucky for now. But, yeah, she. I can just see her getting along fantastically with the thoroughbred personality. It's like, sure, you're feeling a little silly today. Let's just go do that. You know, she's so, let's just go with the program.
And what's funny is that she talks about how the off-the-track thoroughbreds are so much easier than the horses that know nothing. And just a little update on Joe Montana.
Oh, yeah. What's up with the little Joe?
This is another horse we got from jail, but he is a 4-year-old thoroughbred, but he never raced. So the challenge with him is that I'm starting him from the ground, you know, going from nothing. So it's been interesting because, like with Jet was already broke. I just kind of had to restart him and kind of brush him up on stuff. This mm-hmm. horse has never been ridden ever in his entire life, not to mention the fact that he spent his first 4 years in a stall. So it's been a challenge. I have been on him now 5 times, and we trotted for like 15 steps last time. I had my student get out in front of him because he doesn't know what leg means, and I taught him the voice commands on the ground, but the leg, when you put it on him, he doesn't understand what that means, and you take that for granted when you have a horse that goes when you squeeze. So I had my student get in front of me on her pony, and I was like, okay, Rachel, go ahead and trot. And she starts trotting, and then Joe starts following him. So he's starting to learn a little bit.
You're using the follow the leader method.
Exactly. I'm like, might as well use what they have in their brains. You know, it's like, oh, sure. He's trotting. What's that squeezing? Oh, I guess I should trot too because he's trotting and they're squeezing. What is that squeezing?
It's not a whole lot different than at the racetrack. They give them a pony horse. So when they get out to the racetrack, they kind of bond with that horse and go, okay, I'm going to follow him. It's really scary out here. And they follow them. And it's really an effective method of encouraging a horse to move forward from the get-go. It's
yeah.
harder to buck or rear when you're moving forward. So it's always a good policy.
That is kind of true.
I'm back.
I didn't say it was impossible. I said it's harder.
Oh, geez. Glenn's back. What happened?
I got totally disconnected, and I'm on the phone because I can't reconnect through my computer, so I'm going to work on that for a minute, see if we can fix
okay.
that. I thought everybody got knocked off, but apparently it was only me.
Yeah, I was like, hello, Glenn, and Carrie was still there, and Jennifer was there, so we're good.
Okay, good. As long as you stayed online, that's what's important.
Well, is there an Amazon ad I'm supposed to play, or is it just vocal?
Actually, we're just going to talk about Amazon. We wanted to remind everybody that if you're going to buy anything at Amazon, go to our webpage at horsesinthemorning.com. There's an Amazon link, a graphic on the left side of the page. Go ahead and just click on that. That'll take you to Amazon. Doesn't cost you any extra. There's no charges or fees. It just we get a little bit of a credit for everything that you buy on Amazon then, and it just helps support the network. And Jamie, I think you actually helped support the network, didn't you?
I did. I want some of that money because I just spent a couple $100 on Amazon, and it's so easy. Every time you go to Amazon.com, just think, oh, because I actually went to Amazon.com, and I was like, oh, crud, I need to go to Horses in the Morning first. So I backed out of that, went to Horses in the Morning, and then clicked on the little Amazon link, and I ordered, like, a couple $100 worth of stuff. Like, I had to get some side reins for Joe Montana, and they have tack and stuff. I got Ulcer Guard on Amazon.com for way cheaper than I found it on any horse website around. So Ulcer Guard at like $35 a tube, and it was like $50 at my vet, $35 online. I got it for $28 a tube, and so I bought a whole bunch of them. So you guys are going to get a big old check from Amazon.com because I was like, I need a couple years' supply. That's so cheap. I should get a lot. So I went ahead and purchased a bunch. And who thought you could get Ulcer Guard on Amazon.com? But you can get anything.
They have everything.
They really do.
They do.
So I
now,
got
do you
side
belong
reins.
To the Prime thing for Amazon? Do you belong to Prime?
No, because I've only shopped at Amazon really since you started telling us about it. Because I bought a bunch of Christmas presents off Amazon, and then now this. So what's the Prime thing? Should I join?
It's $75, I think, but what it for a year. But what it does is it gives you free 2-day shipping on any order you do for the whole year. So if you ordered a lot of stuff, it would make sense. If you order more than, you know, stuff that's going to be $75 worth of shipping, it makes sense to do it. Because there are people that, you on Amazon, you can set up your toilet paper to renew every couple of months. Or every month, you can have toilet paper sent to you. You can do automatic things on Amazon. So there's a lot of people that get a lot of their household stuff shipped. And if you spend the $75 for the Prime, then you get free shipping on every order you place. And it's 2-day shipping, so you get it in 2 days. So some people that buy a lot of stuff, you know, take advantage of that. We haven't done it because I don't think we buy enough to make it quite worthwhile.
No, I wouldn't do that either. But I'll start keeping track of how much, because now I'm kind of addicted to Amazon. Anything I need, I go, okay, let's go to horsesinthemorning.com and then click on the Amazon link and surf. And that's what I do. So, if nobody else does it, I at least get a little bump in my pay. that $4 that you got from me shopping at Amazon, I want half.
Okay, we'll do that. I'll tell you what, I'll buy you a half of a vegetarian wrap at Rolex.
Oh, my gosh. I got my tickets. Woohoo!
Oh, did you? Yeah, you got your tickets. Is Chad officially coming?
I got play tickets to come to Lexington and Orbitz. Speaking of websites, that it was cheap. Holy cow. I went to the regular websites and it was really expensive. Orbitz.com, I got them for $300 a pop. Both tickets, like $298 total to fly from Phoenix to Louisville. And yes, Chad is coming. And yes, we are flying in at like probably, we get in, I think, at 10 o'clock at night. On Wednesday, and then we leave Sunday around 7. So I need you, Glenn, to drive me to Louisville when
we
leave.
Okay, yeah, we can do that.
I'm so excited.
Sounds like fun. You're going to be really tired for this live show that morning from Rolex on Thursday. You're going to be, like, sleepy.
Can't be any worse than I am now, so go ahead.
I'm going to switch. I think I'm connected back through the system again and on the microphone to the studio here. So I'm going to hang up the phone and say hi over there. So talk to yourself for a minute.
Talk amongst yourselves. Well, our guest is on the line. Carly Sparks is on the line. So Glenn's going to take over this interview here. And she's an ESMA newbie finalist from getmyfix.org. Glenn, are you there?
Carly's not there.
Hi, Carly.
Hi.
Well, I get to talk to you then. Carly, hello. Welcome to Horses in the Morning. And
I'm back.
Tell us.
Can you hear me now?
Oh, yes,
there you
can.
Ah, I'm starting to sweat here. Going through withdrawal. I needed a fix. Okay, Carly, before we get into what your website really is about, I have a question for you. Getmyfix.org. How much traffic do you get from people who are not into horses but into something else?
You know, I do get a lot of porn in the comments, but thankfully they're moderated, so it never makes it onto the site.
Just had to ask that. When I saw the name, I went, wow. And, you know, I'm considered America's horse husband, and I always talk about how addicted our wives are. They're addicted to horses. This is not an obsession. It's an addiction. And it was so funny when I first read why you picked getmyfix.org. You agree with me.
Yeah, 100%. You know, horses have been hard on my body. They're hard on my marriage. It's hard on my career, you know. But I keep coming back for more. And I love it.
You actually have, kind of like we did, we created a radio network. And you, was it your husband that said, you got to do something to make some money? Was he the one that said that?
I am quite certain that when my husband asks me to do things to make money, it does not involve horses.
But yet you did. You started to become a freelance writer, right? About horses.
Yeah. Well, I always was a freelance writer, actually. I'll give you a little bit of history here on Get My Fix. Previously, I was the editor of Horse Care magazine, which is kind of the Canadian version of The Horse, or was, anyway.
Okay.
And when I was at Horse Care, I was really keen to take that magazine online, so I pitched all sorts of ideas to the publisher. I wrote this whole business plan about how great it was going to be, and for lots of valid reasons, he wasn't into it. So when my time at Horse Care came to an end, I thought, if I'm so sure this is going to work, I should just do it myself. And if I'm going to do it myself, I'm going to focus on the area that is close to my heart, which is hunter-jumper.
Well, we talk about Eventing Nation here a lot because Jamie is an eventer. My wife used to be an eventer, so our hearts sort of lean that way.
Yeah.
And he really has made that a blog for the eventing world, and that's kind of what you've got going on here for the hunter-jumper world.
Yeah. That's the goal anyway, you know. I'm just really a huge fan of the sport. I would love to see show jumping or hunter jumper become as big as hockey in Canada or football in the States. So if I can help in any small way, I'll do my best.
Now, you do a couple different things on there, too. You're not just covering the news of what's going on in the Hunter Jumper world, but you also have different sections that I found interesting, like the 5-Minute Clinic, the Daily Fix. Tell us about those sections.
Okay. Well, I was really fortunate to get to ride with Canadian Olympian Hugh Graham for a number of years, and also with Amy Miller. And the time that I rode with them, I learned so much. Like, my riding improved so dramatically in those 3 short years that I thought it would be really great when I was doing my site if I could bring that, you know, elite level kind of training to everyone else, to the make it widely available. Funny, because about a month after I started the 5-Minute Clinic, I found Bernie Trawrig's EquestrianCoach.com, and he's basically doing the same thing, but better. So, mine's free.
Yeah, we've had on there talked about that.
Yeah,
now, so, I like, you know, what you're doing with the reports. Like, I was just reading the Monday report, and you really do go over a little bit, just the headlines and a paragraph or two about what's going on currently in the Hunter Jumper world. I like that because I can look at it quickly, and I don't have to read long articles, and I can just get the news quickly, and that's what I like.
Oh, excellent. You know, unless you actually watch the class, it's kind of boring to read about after. So it's kind of a catch-22 because you want to know what's happening in, you know, at all the major circuits, but at the same time, reading along, you know, a whole page about who made it to the jump off and who did not, it's a bit dry. So I thought I'd just go straight to the quick there.
I thought I was the only one that felt that way. But apparently,
yeah, be nice.
I don't know. It's a lot of work, I got to tell you. I just started that Monday report for the beginning of this circuit, and I thought it was a great idea, but now Sunday rolls around, and I'm like, oh, my God. It takes a long time to put together the Monday report.
I want to talk to you about that because people think, you know, they look at websites like Eventing Nation, they look at other terrific blog sites, and they think that it's easy. How hard can this be is what they say to themselves. I just have to write a thing. I just have to write a post every day, and I just have to look at what the news is. And I just have to do, and I just have to do that, and I just have to do this until they try and do it every single day.
Yeah. Yeah.
Tell them how hard that actually is.
It's hard, Glenn. It's a lot of work. It's a lot of work. It's ridiculously fun, too, but it is a bit taxing at times, for sure.
But it's the same here. I mean, we do this show every day, Monday through Friday, and
yeah,
we have to book the news. It sounds like we don't have to do any preparation at all. But that's clear. We want it to sound that way. No, I'm just kidding. We do.
Oh,
I mean,
you guys, hold up. You guys act like you're digging ditches here, and you're not. I mean, my God, it's not that hard. You get to write about what you're passionate about. We get to talk about what we're passionate about. It is such a fantastic job, and your website is great, and I love your video of the week because that was my video of the day. I just saw that today, and you've got it up. It is the Runaway Bride. And why don't you describe what the Runaway Bride video of the week that you have on there is?
Because I just found that maybe half an hour ago. And I just found that horsenation.com, which is amazing. I think I
have
to go.
That's what I found. Yeah, that's where I got it. Horsenation.com is the bomb website. It's awesome.
Yeah, I just spent 5 minutes going through it. I hadn't a chance to dig through it, but hilarious. I loved it. So I saw that video, and that was amazing. You know, the bride, she's all on that massive white horse. They're bringing her out to whatever, and she gives her little wave, and everybody erupts and claps her, and the horse takes off. And that guy trying to hold on to the end of it, he's skiing into the lead rope. That was amazing.
Yeah, so she walks out there. But what made me mad is it's obvious that the people in the crowd are not horse people because they start clapping. This ginormous draft horse takes off galloping. When they finally catch it again, they bring it back over, they start clapping again.
I know. It's the most genius moment of the whole thing.
I'm like, you guys are idiots. Stop clapping. You're spooking the horse.
Stop clapping.
Well,
and who cares? It's a big horse,
great.
You know?
Yeah, it's a giant draft horse. But, you know, the bride on the white horse, it's so romantic. And I just love the fact that you can see the parked cars in the background and people walking around. It's like, you should have probably done this in a more private area, but whatever.
Not the open field.
I know. It's a wide open field. Like, giddy up, pony. I love it. The website is getmyfix.org. And, again, good job getting that name. That's well done.
Oh, well, I have kind of a funny story about the name, actually. It was originally it was going to be called The Fix, you know, just The Fix. I did a quick little Google search for thefix.com, and there was no website there, so I assumed that meant that domain was available. And then I had my logo designed and everything, and then when I went to actually put the site up, I discovered that it is not actually available. So,
oh no. Always buy the name first.
Always buy the name first. That's it.
That's our advice of the day if you're starting a website, is always buy the name first.
Buy the name first. That's it.
Well, I like Get My Fix, though. I think that The Fix sort of sounds like you're bribing somebody or you're cheating on something. So
I think
this looks better. Yeah, I think The Fix, because, you know, that's the term that they're using if you're putting a fix in. If you're trying to fix an election or a horse race or a sporting event, it's called The Fix. So I think you did better doing it with Get My Fix anyway.
Well, I appreciate that.
And every drug addict in America is going to come there. It's going to drive your numbers up. And you're going to be able to charge more for advertising. You might want to reconsider what you're advertising, but
we're equal opportunity, you know?
That's right.
Whatever feeds my addiction.
Thank you, Carly. We appreciate you being on. Good job with this, and good luck with the Asthma Awards. It's getmyfix.org. Thanks, Carly.
Thank you.
Bye.
I didn't even think about that name being like a druggy thing. I just that's how out of touch I am. But like, yeah, you're right. Like, I need my fix. Well, let's Google it.
First thing I thought of, and I thought, if she gets popular, she's going to have more non-horsey traffic than horsey traffic. But, you know, that's traffic's traffic when it comes to advertisers, right? So.
Yeah. I guess that's true. Hey, I got a news story for you before we play the song, because this was a little bit dramatic the other day when we talked about it, and it kind of sparked a little bit of a debate. And I think that the main thing about the diving horses is that they were going to reintroduce the diving horse attraction to Atlantic City's Steel Pier. Now, have you guys actually watched the movie Wild Hearts Can't Be Broken yet?
No, we have not.
Oh my gosh, put it on your Netflix queue. It's a horse movie that you haven't seen.
Is it black and white?
It's not black and white. It was made in the late 80s. So it's not that bad. It's a great movie, and it's a true story about the diving horses in Atlantic City and one of the girls that became one of the diving girls. Anyway. Long story short, they were going to revamp the whole diving horse attraction, and oh my gosh, horse lovers, PETA, the Humane Society, everybody freaked out. They were like, no way are you going to do this. This is absolutely horrible. And then they were like, hey, we're going to preserve history. You know, we want to bring it back and we want to show people that there's no cruelty, no abuse ever. They did research. It's going to be humane. Well, it didn't matter what they said, because the Humane Society and all these people said that the management is going crazy. Do not do this. So they have now revoked the plans to have the diving horses on the pier. So it is no longer going to happen. Apparently, Wayne Pacelli, who is the Humane Society guy, president, said that they are having a celebration following the news that the plans have been canceled. And my opinion on the diving horses, you know, I don't think that being jumping horses and stuff like that, I don't think that they're going to do it if they don't want to. Or if they're not okay with it. Yes, it's dangerous, and yes, it's probably not a really good idea. So let's go with that. But do I want to see it? We decided kind of yes and no. I kind of want to see it, but I kind of don't. But
same
watch
reason
the movie,
people like to watch a train wreck. You know, it's the same kind of thing. You drive by the accident, and you're one of the rubberneckers. It's that kind of thing. You sort of want to watch, but, you know, you don't. You're right.
Well
that's interesting.
To see it for myself, I would love to see kind of how they do it. And do these horses love to do it? Because you as a horse person, you would think you would be able to tell if these horses like doing it. I mean, there's crazier stuff that horses do. Well, maybe not crazier than this, but there's crazy stuff horses do, and they love it.
Right. Right. You're right. You're absolutely right. Yeah, you know, eventing, you know, people pick on eventing, too, and they talk about how cruel it is to take him cross-country and all of that stuff. Well, you know, you see some of these horses out there, they just love doing that. I mean, it's not...
Yeah, no. That is the only part of it Jet loves.
That's
like,
true. That is true. Yeah,
the
dressage,
confines of the dressage arena are horrible. Huh?
Dressage, which is supposed to be very humane and good, you know, all good, he hates. So
he hates it. And then you want me to jump in this arena? No, let me go. Let me get out of here. I want to go run cross country. So, yeah, when people say eventers, it's cruel. I'm like, that is a lie because my horse loves it. And there is no way that you could get a horse to do the stuff that event horses do without them wanting to do it. There's no forcing a horse to jump. It's just you can't do it.
Well, we actually watched last night. One thing we did watch, and we'll talk about it a little later in the show, is Full Metal Jousting. So we got to watch the first episode of Full Metal Jousting, and I'll give you my opinion of that a little bit later in the show. But I will say this right off the top, and then we're going to go to our song. Fake Winnie's everywhere.
No! Now, you yep. were one of 1.9 million viewers, and apparently they're saying that it was not very well received because they were expecting more, but apparently there was some, like, zombie pre-premiere and also the Grammys, which, because of Whitney Houston, got more viewers than they have in, like, ever. So
yeah.
Keep that in mind, too. So maybe Full Metal Jousting. I watched the preview, and we can post that preview online as well because it actually made me really want to watch it. But Fake Winnie's?
Yeah, we'll talk about it later. I'll tell you what I think later. But first, let's talk about FeedXL, our sponsor, and then we're going to play a song for you today. Thought we'd go back to the girls today. We've had some bullies here recently. So we're going to play Templeton Thompson. And I'd rather run than crawl. And then we're going to be back with thehorse.com talking about cribbing today.
Poor Gypsy is suffering from horse envy. He's the new kid in the pasture and can't get over the stamina and shape of his fellow stallmates. Rumors around the barn point to FeedXL. Seems their owner has been online and discovered the FeedXL nutrition tool. That means Gypsy's in for a big transformation. The other horses have been telling Gypsy all about the changes made to their diet and how FeedXL has improved their overall well-being. When it comes to your horse's diet, conflicting advice can result in overfeeding and money wasted. With a FeedXL nutrition tool, enter your horse's weight, diet, and activity level to get started. It'll allow you to see where your horse's diet stands and give you the opportunity to revise it until it's balanced. FeedXL has the latest science backing them up, allowing you to take charge of your horse's diet with an easy-to-use nutrition tool, taking the guesswork out of what to feed your horse. It's almost like Gypsy has his own personal nutritionist right at the barn. Visit FeedXL.com for a simple and easy nutrition tool to balance your horse's diet for optimum health.
Troubles were hung out to dry. Back on that old
Well, that was Templeton Thompson. I'd rather run than crawl. And you can find all of her music at templetonthompson.com or just search for her in iTunes. You'll find it all there as well. Do you remember, Jamie, she was doing a project to try and raise money to put a new CD together? Well, apparently the new CD should be coming out within the next month or two. So she's been keeping everybody up to date in that. We're looking forward to hearing all of the new music. If I remember right, didn't she say this was going to be a cover CD? She was going to cover other songs on this one?
I believe so. So, you know, there's nothing better than the original is Templeton Thompson actually covering an original song that you really like, because she's going to do it justice every single time. So love her music, and can't wait for the new CD.
Well, you're listening to Horses in the Morning. I am Glenn the Geek here with a horse. I can use that a bad pun there. A horse, Jamie Jennings. And of course, Coach Jen over in the producer chair. And
oh,
we are here on. What's that?
I said, I get it.
I'm
a little horse.
She's a little sick today, but she's here like a trooper, like a true horse girl here anyway, going out to clean the stalls anyway. If you're sick, the stalls need cleaned, right? Yeah, horse people need
pain. Yeah, you know, unfortunately, I've given the horses 2 days off because I felt so bad the past 2 days, but they're not going to get any more time off now. I'm going to have to get them work today. I'm just going to put on a scarf, cover the throat, and get out there and ride them, because, my God, they've had enough time off.
Well,
and
we,
I want to know,
yeah.
Just real quick for horse people, do you, if you're sick or you're out of town or you're something or other, do you feel guilty not riding your horses? Like, I feel like with my horses, they've all had 2 days off, and I feel guilty about it. So
you
maybe
feel
we
guilty,
can make that...
but they do not.
They probably don't care. But
no,
I'm curious,
I think you're,
you know,
the one that feels guilty. They're just happy that you haven't made them work today, and they're out there eating.
I know, but I want to know what other horse people think. Do they feel guilty if they don't ride their horses? Maybe we can make that our question of the day. Like, you're sick, you're out of town, you're on vacation. Do you feel guilty not riding your horses? And, you know, when does that guilt kick in? Like, mine kicked in just when they get a day off, because I feel like I'm ignoring them.
I'm posting it on Facebook right now. Jamie wants to know, do you feel guilty if you
not
can't ride
your
horse? Yeah. All right, I'm
Thank
posting
you.
That right now.
Misery loves company. So, yeah, get
I know
in there.
Jennifer does. I think she would agree. I think she's taking a call right now, but I think she would agree that that is true. And I think I'll be shocked if we don't get if we get one person that says they don't feel guilty.
Yeah, I don't know. I remember Karen O'Connor said once that, you know, the difference between good riders and great riders. Good riders will go out to the barn, and you get there, and you're like, oh, this is great. Okay, I'm not going to ride today. I'm just not feeling it, but I'll go groom and take care of my horse. Well, that's a good rider. A great rider rides their horse every day. Doesn't matter. So ever since I heard that when I was like 15 years old, I've always, if I go out there, I ride my horse. So when you're sick or something, I feel terrible. I feel like I'm a bad rider.
Of course, if you don't get better, you're going to be sick longer, and you're not going to ride for 2 weeks. So, there's another side to that. And remember, the horses don't care. They're just happy. They're out there eating, and you're not making them do anything. Speaking of good riders wear helmets, and the Riders for Helmets website, ridersforhelmets.com, is having a contest right now. They are offering a free $50 equestrian collections gift certificate and a free saddle pad to the winning entry in an equestrian safety helmet story contest. So you want to write in, and if you actually used your helmet for what it was intended, you fell off and you cracked your head or something like that, they want those stories, and they're going to pick one of those to be the winner. And entries are pouring in. You can find out more about it at ridersforhelmets.com. Just check it out over there and read some of the fascinating stories that people are submitting there. Helmets do make a difference, and when you read these stories, you're going to see why. So stop over to Riders for the number 4 helmets.com. Well, it's that time when we get together every week and we talk horse health. And I'm going to play this, but I don't think I'm going to have a problem with this one.
It's time for the weekly health report from Horse.com.
fantastic information and their attempt to ruin Glenn's lunch every week.
That's right. It's time for thehorse.com, and we, as always, have Michelle here from thehorse.com. Good morning, Michelle.
Good morning, Glenn.
You decided to give me a week off because you're not talking about anything that's gory gross today.
I don't know. Hold on.
Yeah. There's surgery mentioned in there.
Oh, I didn't read down that far. But it's just cribbing. We're talking about cribbing. The horses put their teeth on there, and it's not bleeding. It's not gross. No pustules, no big. The last 2 weeks, you've really gone overboard to make me sick, and you were kind of even getting the Jamie last week. So this week we take a break. We just talk about cribbing and wind sucking.
Mm-hmm. We are, and we have Dr. Dan Burbo with us. He is from Louisiana State University. He's a board certified surgeon, and he has a research interest in treating cribbers surgically, so he actually is coming up with a solution for these horses. So for the listeners who aren't familiar with cribbing, it's a vice. It's kind of a nasty vice that no one really wants their horses to figure out. It's where the horse puts their mouth on something, usually a fence, sometimes a water trough, whatever they can get their mouth on. Sometimes the air, sometimes they don't even put their mouth on something. But they do that, and then they suck the air in. It's not to be confused with chewing on your fencing. You know, lots of horses are wood chewers. It's not that, but it is really hard on your fences and your stall doors and whatever they can get their mouth on. So I wanted to start with Dr. Burba and ask him, you know, what's in it for these horses? Why do horses crib?
Well, good morning, everybody. How's everybody this morning?
Good.
Good. Thank you for joining us, Dr. Burba.
Well, it's been my pleasure to join you all this morning. Well, first of all, let me start out as to why do horses crib. And there's been a lot of work, a lot of research to answer this question, and we really still do not have a definitive answer, but there's some research that suggests that it may be a matter of satisfying a perceived need by some of these horses. Genetics may play a role, as some researchers believe that hereditary may be a factor, and there's more work looking into that. I speculate there's a trigger center in the horse's brain that makes it a pleasurable experience for the horse, which is reinforced with each act as they do it. You'll see a lot of horses doing it when they're fed, especially a concentrate feed. When feeding time comes around, the intensity of the cribbing increases. So there's probably a reward mechanism pathway that is being established in the horse's brain as these horses crib. And I think it's by a means by which a horse has developed to cope with domestication over the years and the intense training and management conditions and their surroundings. Cribbing has been around for ages. It was actually first described back in the 1800s. So it's not really a relatively new problem. It's been out there for a while, and it's obviously been an aggravating vice that's, trying to find a way we can alleviate it.
Could it be as simple as a habit becomes an addiction?
Yes, it sure is.
Okay.
And I think it's, if you look at it, the more it's done, the more it's reinforced, and obviously it becomes more of a pleasure for the horse, or at least some way of coping with a situation.
So do you find that some horses are more prone to this behavior? Is there a profile for the horse that takes up cribbing?
Well, I think to a certain extent you can look at certain horses as to what they do. At least the work that I've done, that there are certain types of horses that seem to be more prone than others. The cribbing itself has been reported to be approximately 4% of all the horses actually crib, if you look at the total numbers. I'm currently looking at that percentage that comes to our hospital to see if that correlates with the research out there. But I find that's a surprisingly large number considering the number of horses that are out there. So it's interesting with my work and work by others that draft horses actually seem to not be affected with this as compared to other breeds. And that may be for what they're used for, or is there a genetic predisposition here? But cribbing seems to be more prevalent in quarter horses and thoroughbreds, although we do see it in several other breeds, including warm bloods.
So lots of owners worry about their horses going to a training barn or a boarding facility and getting stalled next to a horse that's a cribber and learning that habit. And often these cribbing horses are kind of stuck in the corner stalled away from everyone so that they aren't teaching any horses this advice. Is that something that horse owners should be worried about? Are other horses going to teach their horse how to windsuck?
Well, that's a good question, and a lot of these horses are kind of treated like the stepchild that's placed off there in the corner. I don't necessarily think that's the case. There's been some research recently support that the idea that it's not a learned behavior. However, as with all mammals, there are vices that are learned from others of the same species. Take cigarette smoking, for example. Exposing young people at a very young age, there's a certain percentage when they're going to try it. And I think it's the same way with horses and cribbing. So I think that's why some horses or some owners are reluctant to have horses that crib come into the barn. There are some of those horses that are going to experiment with it and when they see others do it. And so it's not that it's going to be a guarantee that every horse sees it's going to do it. I think there are some of them, if the conditions are right, they look at it, hey, let me give it a try and see what it's like. And I think so that's why it's this reluctancy to put these horses in the barns, but I don't think every horse is going to pick it up when they see it.
So,
gosh, it sure seems to me. Sorry, Michelle. It just sure seems to me like it is a smoker habit. It's like something that they have to do, they need, and then they do it, and then they calm down, and and then they pass it on to their friends, like, "Hey, man, try one of these. It's really good."
That's right.
So I don't understand.
Exactly.
So is that kind of correct in my assumption there?
Well, that's a good question, a good point. Can horses reason? And that's something we don't know really for sure. So are they thinking, do I want to try that or do I not? But I think there is a certain aspect that when they see others do it, yeah, they give it a try. But why is it that other horses don't? Is there some form of either intelligence that, I don't need that to cope with my situation, or is there just some inherency in their genetics that they don't need to do it in order to cope with their surroundings or situation? But I think it is very similar to a coping mechanism like we see with people who smoke cigarettes.
Now, I find that with people who have horses that crib, lots of times they'll say, I sent this horse to the trainer and it came back a cribber. It learned to crib at the barn. And we always want someone to blame for
right.
our horse's
right.
bad habits. Is it that the horse was possibly stalled next to a windsucker, or is it maybe something to do with management and being stabled in a training situation?
Well, obviously I'm a horse owner myself, so I know how the show industry is. I think it's more of a the management, maybe not necessarily what I call the management, but what the horse is going through to get from point A to point B in their career. And that may be a very intense training program that puts a lot of stress on them, and this is the way they're coping with it. I don't necessarily think this because there was another horse at that barn or stables is why they pick it up. I think it's more the aspect that there's some inherency in some of these horses to do it in order to be able to cope through the stressful situations that they're going through. And, of course, we see a lot in young horses. The average age that I've seen it, worked on horses around 5 years of age. Some has been younger than that, as early as 6 months of age. Never been around any horses cribbed, but as soon as they're weaned, they start cribbing. And That may have been that stressful time period in their life when they're separated from their mother. It was in a way which was extremely stressful to them, and this is the way they coped with it.
So besides these horses destroying your fences or your barn doors, cribbing, what kind of impact does it have on the animal? What kind of health problems do these horses have because of this vice?
Well, probably the biggest health issue that occurs is excessive wearing of the upper front teeth, or what we call the incisors. Some horses are such chronic cribbers that they actually wear those teeth down to the gum line, and this obviously may create some issues with grazing out in pastures if they are pastured. If they're not pastured, it may not be such a big deal. I see a lot of horses with intestinal disorders that colic or crib, particularly a colic. There's been a recent report come out showing that a certain small intestinal entrapment is related to cribbing. Now, what correlation that actually there is with that, not really sure, but I seem to hear in my hospital as well that this particular small intestinal entrapment, you go back, you inquire about the animal, and the owner comments that the horse cribbed. So there is intestinal disorders and even including weight loss that some of these horses will go through. Because some horses will spend so much time and energy cribbing, they expend a lot of that energy that they're taking in to cribbing, or they maybe not eat properly. And so as a result, weight loss is a big factor as well.
So to manage this vice, you know, we see lots of horses with collars on that are anti-cribbing collars, you know, changing up their environment, turnout, and those kind of things. But you have a surgery that you're using. Can you tell us a little bit about how that's working and what your surgical method is?
Sure, you bet. What I've done is essentially taken a previously described surgical technique and revised it. This surgical technique was actually described back in the 1920s by Dr. Forsell. And this procedure was rather disfiguring and was not well accepted by the horse owners, and so was really not favored. And then in the 1980s, it was revised. And this is where the procedure is now called the modified Forsell technique, and it's still used today. What I've done with the procedure is revised it even more by being more aggressive with the excision of the muscles underneath the throat latch that are responsible for pulling or retracting the throat. I believe that scar tissue was the reason that previous procedures did not have a high percentage of success. And the procedure that I'm doing reduces that scar tissue formation and better success through that. By removing these muscles, I believe the trigger mechanism is removed for most horses, and the desire of cribbing is broken. And we have approximately a 90% success rate. And what we've looked at with this, we divided the duration of the cribbing into two groups. And we looked at a group of horses that were cribbing less than 2 years, and group of horses that were cribbing more than 2 years. And we looked at the horses that failed to stop cribbing after the surgery and looked at their duration of cribbing. And we found that of those ones that failed, ones that were cribbing more than 2 years were twice likely to crib or fail as well as the ones that were less than 2 years. So really what the take home on that is, these horses that are cribbing for an extended period of time, it's really ingrained in them. Now, we can still help those horses, but there is a certain percentage of those horses that are just, despite even the surgery, are still going to crib as well. So the sooner that the vice is broken, the cycle of it is broken, obviously the much higher success rate you're going to have of offering that horse from cribbing.
So the horses that you... I'm sorry.
I was just going to say, we've had a number of horses that cribbed over the years because we've always owned thoroughbreds. We've used the collars and the Weber collar and the other collar, which we happen to personally like the Weber collar better. One of the things that we've noticed is numerous barns is horse owners can't understand that when you use the collars, they have to actually be tight enough for them to work. So my question for you is, with the horses we've had, the collars have worked pretty well, but can you address the issue? Are the collars hurting the horses, or these people that are going, is the collar hurting the horse more than the cribbing is, or you know what I'm asking?
Right. And it actually what you're doing is initiating a pain response by using the collar when the horse tries to crib, and that pain response is actually pressure on that throat. And so, yes, that's why you have to, at least in most horses, put it on fairly tight. Now, there are horses that, again, through the mechanism that it was discomforting, that you can loosen it up, and in some horses, just having that collar on there, they just correlate, have that correlation. Well, if it's on there, I'm not going to crib. However, a lot of horses, they continue to test the system and find that if there's not that pain associated with the cribbing, that even if they have that cribbing collar on, they're going to go ahead and crib. So, yes, it is really a pain response that stops these horses from cribbing by using.
But they're not getting that pain unless they actually are cribbing. In other words, they're not getting it when they're eating or when they're drinking water. They can still do all those things.
That's correct, exactly. So it's the only during that act when they're having to retract or pull that larynx back, they tense all those muscles underneath the throat, and you can do it yourself. You can actually tense all those muscles, and if you grab your throat and tense it, you'll notice that it's a little bit more uncomfortable with your hand around your throat when you tense it than if your throat is relaxed. And that's the same thing with the horse. When they're tensing their throat latch to crib with that collar around there, it's a lot more uncomfortable for them, and so that's why it deters them from cribbing.
Okay. So what you are saying in a way is use the collar, try and stop this cribbing in any way you can, because eventually it's going to be harmful. We have seen horses whose teeth have been non-existent in the front.
Right. It's a vice that once a horse starts, there's very few that will spontaneously stop. Once it's initiated and it's repeated, there's that obviously something in the brain that's either a pleasure center or something in there that with each react is being reinforced more and more and more, and so it becomes obviously much more addicting. And so if you can break that cycle early, you're going to have a better chance of stopping that horse from it being a long lifetime or lifetime situation for him.
All right, great. Well, we are running out of time here, Michelle. Is there anything else we needed to cover?
No. We have on our Facebook page a recent article that refers to cribbing, so go to thehorse.com's Facebook page. If you're looking for other information about cribbers, you can go to thehorse.com, do a search for cribbing or windsucking. And I also just posted a video last night from AAEP, which also mentions what Dr. Berba mentioned, that horses that crib do have a higher tendency for colic, so you can watch that too and find out more information.
And Dr. Berber, do you have a website that people can find?
Yes, it's the our Equine Health Studies Program website. If they go to EHSP, I believe it's EHSP.com, you'll see it on there.
Okay.
If they even just Google EHSP, the website, it'll take them to that website then.
All right. Thank you, Michelle, and thank you, Dr. Berba.
We appreciate you
being here. This is a problem that everybody runs into. If you own any number of horses over time, you're going to own a cribber. And that doesn't mean, I want to add this, that doesn't mean you shouldn't own a cribber. Cribbers turn out to be, there are some very famous cribbers in this world that turn out to be terrific horses. You just have to manage it, and you have to manage it. That's what it comes down to.
That's correct. Exactly. And you're absolutely right. There's been a lot of world champions out there that's had this problem. It's just that, the way that, as far as managing it, getting through it, and they become, actually, a lot of them become excellent horses. Glenn, I appreciate the time.
All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Y'all have a great day. Thank you.
You too. I mean, one very famous horse that has been in the news all year long, Neville Bardos, who is Boyd Martin's horse.
I didn't know he was a cribber.
Yeah, big time cribber. He was in the barn fire, you know, and he was one that survived. He had the worst burns in his throat and his trachea and everything. And they said that he never, even in the hospital where he's hooked up to, you know, getting oxygen, he's still cribbing through the whole thing.
Oh, geez.
And I wonder if him cribbing through it, like got more air to his lungs and like helped him out, maybe. I don't know, but apparently he just kept cribbing and cribbing and cribbing through the whole thing. Even hooked up to IVs, he's cribbing.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
You know, I've been, let's go back to Facebook here. Thank you to the horse for coming on. I found that fascinating because it is, you know, I wanted to add that at the end because there's a lot of people that say, oh, I want a cribber in my barn. Well, you don't throw you could have the world champion there and you just threw him out of your barn because he cribs. It is something that's manageable. In a lot of cases, the collars work. You just have to put them tight enough and you have to get over your hang up about that. For the benefit of the horse. But I wanted to throw that in at the end there. Now back to your, Jamie, back to your question of the day. Jamie wanted to know if you take a couple days off, if you're sick or if you go away, do you feel guilty if you can't ride your horses for a couple days? And boy, did we get the comments, and it looks like almost every one of them is yes. We've gotten 16 comments so far, and almost every one of them has been yes.
I know. I love it. I'm not the only one who feels guilty. I love that April's comment was, yes, but I'm also a very picky rider. Too hot, too cold, buggy, et cetera. She's not going to ride. And a lot of people said, yeah, if it's too buggy, hot, or cold, Holly Zandarski said she just feels annoyed when she does actually have time to ride and it's too hot or too cold or raining or too buggy or anything like that. But a lot of people did say that their horses quite appreciate it when they don't ride.
that's true. And Kelly Utter chimed in, I've seen my horse once in the last 2 months. I used to feel guilty over a couple missed days, but now not so much. But Kelly has a little baby. She just had a baby. So I think that her mind is on other things right now. She doesn't have time to feel guilty. She's too tired from waking up 12 times a night. So,
I guess the whole baby thing really jacks with your riding schedule.
That's true. Well, you know, I said I was going to give my opinion of Full Metal Jousting before we quit here today. And I'd like to ask Jennifer, because we really didn't talk about it much after we watched it. We have a history with jousting because we were involved in the Renaissance Fair in Pennsylvania for a period of time. We've been to numerous Renaissance Fairs and seen numerous theatrical jousts. And they keep saying this throughout the show, that this is not a theatrical joust, that this is the real thing. And with the theatrical joust, like you'll see at a Renaissance Fair, they actually use a lance that is solid wood up to about 12 inches from the end of the lance. And on the end of the lance, they put balsa wood. And anybody that's had a brother that was into woodworking knows that balsa wood is a very soft wood that you can stick your thumb through. I mean, it's very soft. So what that does is when the lance hits the rider, then the balsa wood just splinters and breaks apart, and it absorbs a lot of the blow. It acts like a shock absorber. Now, I have seen a couple of good hits in the theatrical jousting that we have seen at the Renaissance Fairs, but for the most part, it's all acted out, and they have a certain plan and who falls off. And then it's really funny because if the one knight's supposed to fall off on this final, ride towards each other, and the other guy completely misses and the knight falls off anyway. So there it becomes kind of obvious that this is all just, it's professional wrestling. So anyway, that is not what this show is. These guys are hitting each other, and they're using solid wood. They're using 1¼ to 1½ solid wood lances, and they have the armor set up in such a way, they call it modern medieval armor. They have it set up in such a way that these guys aren't going to get hurt too bad, and they give them a target to aim at. There's a plate on their shoulder. But let me tell you, these guys are hitting each other, and when you see them just doing this, it just hurts to watch it, pretty much.
Yeah.
These are tough guys. They're stuntmen. They're rodeo competitors. There's one little guy in there, Fairclaw, who is a hunter-jumper rider. And
really?
Little guy, Yes, and he is actually pretty good. You didn't see much of him this first episode, but he's a little guy. I mean, a little guy. And the rest of these guys are big bodybuilder types, you know, 250, 250 pounds. And then you have this little hunter jumper rider. But he's so good in the saddle that he seems to be doing pretty well. We'll see more of him coming up. I thought it was pretty good. Jennifer, what do you think? Other than the fake Winnies, I'm going to throw that in there.
Boy, the fake Winnies were tough. Really? You had to put the fake Winnies in there? I think it might grow on me. I'm just not sure yet. It's first season. Obviously, they have limited production dollars available. And these guys are the horse world's professional wrestlers. So you can imagine the personality types and the voiceover skills that they're going to bring to the table. That might be the limiting factor. That might be the limiting factor right there.
Yeah, there's a lot of testosterone in this show.
Yeah.
Which you would imagine.
Beautiful farm, though. Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, I want to know where they filmed it. If anybody knows where they filmed it, let us know, because, oh, my God, is that a beautiful farm that we're at. This is not your typical professional jouster's farm. This is some big hunter jumper dressage place. It's beautiful.
I'm reading on here that it actually beat Real Housewives of Atlanta in the ratings, which is exciting to me because I find that Real Housewives of Atlanta gives Atlanta the worst reputation I have ever seen. Oh, my God, it's embarrassing. I'm from there, and it is embarrassing to me. So
before you go on, those Real Housewives shows, are we sure that they're not aliens? Are they actual humans? Because you can't tell by their faces.
Yeah, especially in the Atlanta one. It's just embarrassing to the city. I mean, I think that the people that live there, you know, that are kind of in that world love it. I find it like giving a very bad portrayal of my home city, you know? Anyway, it did beat that. I did read, though, that there, and in the Full Metal Jousting, it does include a lot of the medieval time knights. From medieval times, like the dinner theater. So
yeah,
I wonder if it's going to be weird that they're really getting hit.
Well, yeah, it is a difference. And they call them theatrical jousters. And when they first did this, if you remember right, we had the guy on who was casting director. You're right. We had him on, and he was saying to us they didn't want people who had jousted before. They just wanted riders. They wanted to teach them how to joust. And then all of a sudden, about half of these guys are from theatrical jousting. So you got to wonder what happened there.
Maybe it wasn't going to be any good. Like, you know, I mean, God loves the little hunter jumper guy, but how exciting is it going to be if 200 jumpers are jousting each other? Probably, you know, they're going to miss and it's going to be boring. So they probably had to get some actual theatrical jousters, but they've got stuntmen, rodeo competitors, horse trainers, and show jumpers, and polo players. And can you guys tell me where the polo player's hot?
They didn't introduce him as a polo player. We didn't see.
They didn't introduce half the cast.
Yeah,
half
the
cast on there. We have no idea who they are. They didn't say anything about them. It was really kind of weird.
They didn't do that the way the most shows do either, where they kind of introduce the cast the first episode. This one, they sort of dived in, and they're introducing people as you go along. And I thought that was a mistake, because you know how the reason shows work, even things like Pawn Stars, is because you get invested in the characters, and they didn't allow us really to get invested in anybody. You didn't want to you didn't have the backstory about how this person overcame this to get there, you know, like American Idol does so well. They haven't done that, so maybe it'll grow. Maybe it'll grow through the years, and it'll be renewed. Who knows? We'll see. I'm waiting to see next week. I think you should watch it. There's a bunch of hot guys just beating each other with sticks. Probably worth watching.
Okay, I think it's a good idea. So I'll watch that. But I did find a new addiction on the television, and it's going to be a problem in my marriage, I can tell already, because you know how I love Dancing with the Stars, because my mom and I watch it, like, on the phone, and we love Dancing with the Stars. However, The Voice is awesome. I love it. I'm only in blind auditions. I loved it. What a great cast. CeeLo, Adam Levine from Maroon 5. You've got Christina Aguilera. You've got Blake Shelton, the country star. It's fantastic. So I cried like twice when the people made it. They give you really good backstories, and they always have to find some sort of drama to relate with this individual person coming out on the stage. So it just brings tears to your eyes, and then they make it. And you're like, yay, he's going to be on Blake's team. Yay. You know, it's ridiculous.
Well,
awesome.
I'll end with this. Samiko chiped in. I thought Full Metal Jousting should have been more about the horses. Yeah, they didn't really talk about the horses much at all. And I enjoyed James Fairclough unhorsing the Marine because nobody expected it. In practice, the little hunter-jumper guy knocked the big Marine guy on his butt right off the horse. He did do a good job there. And she says, weren't most knights actually kind of small? Yes, Samiko, they were not the size of these knights. Most knights range from 5'2" to 5'4". And if you go to any museum that has actual suits of armor from back in the day, they were tiny. You look at them and go, that was a knight? Things were a little different back then. So you were right about that, Samiko. Well, we have to get out of here. Let's come back again tomorrow, Jamie, and do it all again at 9 a.m. on Horses in the Morning.
Sounds good, everybody. Have a great day. Spay, neuter, and geld. I'm going to go
guys.
Ride my horse.
Beating each other.
I feel guilty. Everybody feels guilty when they don't ride their horse, apparently.